This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. All of Australia's biggest banks have lifted home loan interest rates after the Reserve Bank's decision to hike rates for the first time in more than a decade. The official rate is now 0.35%, and homeowners will have to prepare for more increases, with the Reserve Bank governor signalling yesterday the official rate is likely to reach 2.5%. Of course, it's happening in the middle of an election campaign, and our reporter David Lipson joins me. David, this is another defining moment of the election campaign. How is it being framed by Labor and the Coalition?
Well, Sabra, good morning. Well, just as in politics more broadly, it's not uncommon for election campaigns to be dominated by so-called unplanned events, although just like the opposition leader getting COVID in the midst of the campaign, many would say an interest rate rise was very much on the cards here. It is, regardless, a tectonic shift for the nation, a new era of rising prices, the Reserve Bank forecasting 6% inflation by the end of the year, even higher than the shock 5.1% recorded last week, along with this expectation now of a conga line of interest rate rises all the way through until next year at least. And really all the politicians can do at this point of the campaign is respond with the best rhetoric they can muster. The government saying it's a sign the economy is actually coming back strongly after the pandemic. Whether people are actually feeling that on the ground is another matter. On the one hand, members of the government saying it's proof the government has shielded Australia through the toughest of times and they couldn't possibly trust Labor to do that. While on the other, they're seeking to distance themselves from this rate rise. Here was the Treasurer Josh Frydenberg on 7:30.
The Governor and the Board of the Reserve Bank are independent of government and they take decisions based on the economic data available to them, and they've made it very clearly in their statement today that it's been international factors that have been driving up inflation and they have moved as other central banks around the rest of the world have moved.
Yes, absolutely. There have been international factors that have driven this decision, but the reality is that big spending promises by the government have also contributed to this rate rise. The Reserve Bank is really now trying to cool the economy down. Government stimulus is adding fuel to it, so they're working at cross purposes. Now, the opposition is saying this rate rise is proof that the government's economic reputation is in tatters, but it's important to note that Labor has matched almost all of the government's spending promises and added some of its own as well. Here's the Shadow Treasurer, Jim Chalmers.
The choice at the election is between our economic plan, which will strengthen the economy in a high inflation environment and deliver a better future, versus a government which has vacated the field. They spent all their time today, all their time in recent times, pretending that they have absolutely nothing to do with the economy.
So, David, how are voters responding to all of this?
Well, of course, we can't know for sure until we get the results of the election, but this is clearly something that the Prime Minister didn't need 2.5 weeks out from polling day at a time when the published polls show he is chasing Labor. We all remember the last time that we saw an interest rate rise during an election campaign. That was 2007, and John Howard was turfed out of office just 2 weeks later. Of course, there were, though, a litany of other factors in that campaign. For a sense of how voters see it, reporter Gavin Coote took his microphone to Sydney's CBD.
Yeah, I didn't think it would go that much. I thought it might go up, you know, 0.15 or something, but not. I didn't think it would go to 0.25. Yeah, the government's got to take some, well, I wouldn't say blame, but they've got to accept some responsibility. But so has everybody else.
Will it change your vote or those around you, do you think, that this cost of living question?
I think most people these days have made their minds up. You know, you've got swinging voters. I'm a swinging voter. I've decided who I'm voting for, and I would be quite happy to say that the Liberal government has done a good job. Will they get in again? I don't know. I think you'll just have to wait to see what the swinging voters come out with.
I think in the current climate of average inflation rates going up, I can't see what the alternative would have been.
Do you think the government bears some responsibility for this?
Yes, I do. I can't agree that it can all be put down to the pandemic and the war in the Ukraine and something else, whatever is being sprouted. But I don't hold them solely responsible. I think whoever comes into power is going to have a big problem on its hands over the next I would say, probably 3 to 5 years in working through where we are at the moment. Yeah.
If Labor is elected, do you think they're up to that task?
I think they're up to the task, but they're going to have as much of an uphill battle as coalition.
I got a mortgage, so I just thought the next election, how much I going to be extra? That's the first thought I, yeah.
Is it something that you blame the government for? Does the government need...
No, I mean, I think, like, they've already done so much during this pandemic. I mean, I think they've done a good job. And Labor, they always seems to be against the businesses.
It's going to be hard on people who have just scraped through on very low interest rates and maybe bought houses on the low interest rates, but they should have thought, what happens if it goes up?
Do you think it will change people's vote or change your vote, this cost of living?
Change my vote.
So you've already decided?
Oh, yes. Won't be the Liberals.
So you think Labor might be better placed to handle the economy now?
Possibly. Better than the Liberals. Even if we have a hung parliament, that might be the best thing. They can cooperate.
Voters in Sydney's CBD there, and before them, our reporter David Lipson. So how much further will official interest rates rise? Here's what Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe said yesterday.
But over time, it's not unreasonable to expect that the interest rates would get back to 2.5%. How quickly we get there, and indeed if we get there, will be determined by how events unfold.
And as we've heard, the big banks aren't wasting any time passing on the Reserve Bank hike. But there's something else that they've got to think about, and that's how they'll handle borrowers who might be under a bit of stress as they juggle higher loan repayments as part of their household budget. For more on that, I spoke earlier with our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, this will be tough for some borrowers who are betting that low interest rates would last. How will banks manage that hard reality check?
Well, good morning, Sabra. The Commonwealth Bank, Australia's biggest home lender, was the first to say the RBA's supersized quarter of a percentage point rise would be passed on in full on the 20th of May, so a small breather as the news sinks in. But in its statement, the CBA's head of retail banking, Angus Sullivan, noted it was an important time to support customers who've never experienced a rate increase. He also made the point that customers who fall behind in repayments and think they're in strife need to get in touch with the bank to look at options like splitting or fixing loans or setting up offset accounts to better manage the higher rates world. The ANZ Bank noted some people will be doing it tough and offered similar support while noting that 70% of customers are 2 years ahead in their repayments, but once again urged customers in difficulty to get in touch. ANZ releases its half-year results later this morning, and Chief Executive Shane Elliott will be the first Big Four bank boss to be pressed on just how customers will be supported if they feel they're going into distress.
The rate rises are welcomed by the banks in a way because profits then will start to rise. Does that present something of an image problem for the banks?
Well, it is a distant memory, but banks are still rebuilding their reputations after the Banking Royal Commission a few years ago found instances of very poor lending standards. Much of that has been cleaned up, and of course, banks did step in during the pandemic by deferring repayments on around $700 billion in home loans, so people in distress stayed in their homes. But banks will be back to being quite unpopular as rates rise quite aggressively over the next year or so, and households will no doubt be urged by whoever the new treasurer is after the election to shop around for a better deal on their interest rates.
Senior business correspondent Peter Ryan. US Supreme Court's confirmed an explosive draft document on the issue of abortion is authentic. The leaked document suggests the court's poised to overturn the landmark Roe v. Wade decision, which gave American women the constitutional right to have an abortion. Hundreds of people are now protesting outside the court in Washington, D.C. North America correspondent Barbara Miller compiled this report.
The draft opinion confirms the darkest fears of abortion activists. The 50-year-old constitutional right to abortion wouldn't just be eroded by a decision on a case from Mississippi currently before the Supreme Court. it would be obliterated. Outside the court, spontaneous protests are being held, drawing both sides of this divisive debate.
I came here today because everyone should be here today. This is an attack on all people who can get pregnant.
Because a lot of states are actually making their own legislature for this. It's kind of scary.
I will say that as a person who wishes to end abortion in our land, that I am pleased with the results. However, this is not the end, right?
When the political story went up online, activist, congressional hopeful, and Reverend Wendy Hamilton headed straight for the court.
For me, this is like the straw that breaks the camel's back. They have been trying to chip away at voting rights, at women's rights, at human rights. And so I could not stay at home.
And when you say they and them, who exactly are you referring to?
I'm talking about these politicians, particularly conservative ones, who tend to be championing these ideas, who have power. But mainly it's those in power, because Democrats are in power too right now. Let's be clear. We have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. We can do something.
The president is sounding worried.
If this decision holds, it's really quite a radical decision.
You don't get the
responsibility is biblically run to punish evil.
Joe Biden says he'd work towards federal legislation to guarantee the right to abortion, but it's not that simple. Stephen Gillers is a professor of law at NYU.
First of all, can it get passed? Don't think this is purely a Democrat versus Republican issue. There are Republicans, not many, in the Congress who support choice, but probably not enough to get over a filibuster in the Senate. And so the filibuster rule would have to be changed.
The court has confirmed the document is authentic and is promising an investigation, but the horse has well and truly bolted. Americans always knew this decision by the Supreme Court would divide them further still. Now that moment has arrived earlier than anyone could have anticipated. This is Barbara Miller at the Supreme Court in Washington, reporting for AM.
Since the federal budget, the coalition's been peppering electorates across the country with spending promises as it aims for a fourth term in government. One of the biggest commitments is a whopping $5.4 billion to build the Hell's Gates Dam in North Queensland, which has been talked about for a long time. It dwarfs almost any other announcement, and while the government says it'll turn the region into an agricultural powerhouse, critics believe it'd create the most expensive water in Australia. Here's National Regional Reporter Eliza Borello.
There are lots of highly produced promotional videos about the Hell's Gates Dam.
The proposed Hell's Gate Dam on the upper reaches of the Burdekin River is 160 kilometres northwest of Townsville.
And now there's $5.4 billion in the federal budget for it. But water expert Professor Stuart Kahn from the University of New South Wales says there's a large chance it might not be built because the government's promised funding hinges on a business case.
My sense is no, this dam won't be built because I really can't see the business case coming forward that is going to convincingly demonstrate that the benefits do outweigh the costs.
And while the business case for Hell's Gates Dam is yet to be officially released, Townsville Enterprise, the organisation which has prepared it, has told the ABC its work confirms the project is economically viable. And Townsville Enterprise says over 50 years the benefits would outweigh the costs. The plan is to dam the Upper Burdekin River and store enough water to turn some of Queensland's driest cattle country into a food bowl, producing high-value crops like avocados, citrus fruits and table grapes. John Callio is a local grower and supports the project.
It would give us more water security. There are times in the latter months of the year prior to the wet season starting when the Burdekin River can dry up.
But the chairman of the Burdekin River Irrigators Association, Mario Barbagallo, fears Hell's Gates water would cost more than growers could pay.
When you're making an investment on farm, it's more than one election cycle. They need to tell the guys how much the water's going to cost.
Stuart Kahn again.
I can't put a number on it, but it would be the most expensive water in the country.
Usually, state governments develop water projects and they're supposed to charge irrigators enough to cover the costs. But the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, has hinted this water could be heavily discounted, courtesy of federal taxpayers.
We are not asking for a return.
So are the Queensland government, the Labor government, going to come out and say, we want a return on the money we never actually invested?
Richard Houlihan, the chairman of the Gugu Badun Aboriginal Corporation, says there are a number of sacred sites in the area and believes the federal government is jumping the gun.
We should be, one, working out whether it's a viable project at all, and then having the discussions rather than having discussions right in the middle of a political free-for-all.
The Queensland government brushed off the ABC's questions about whether it would charge for the water, while federal Labor says if it's elected, the project would have to provide value for money to be built.
Eliza Barello reporting. More than 2 months after devastating floods in northern New South Wales, an independent inquiry's begun holding public meetings to discuss rebuilding options. With thousands of homes still unlivable, Lismore's council is proposing the idea of moving businesses and homes to higher ground on its golf course. Gavin Coote reports.
The floods inundated thousands of homes and businesses, and months later, many people haven't returned or are struggling to figure out whether to rebuild. Vicky Finlay, who's lived in Lismore for 25 years, is one of them.
Since the floods, there is absolutely nowhere to go. Even caravan parks are full now. Temporary accommodation that people may have gone into, everything is full.
Vicky Finlay and her family were rescued from their rooftop in North Lismore. Now living with a friend, she's applying for the state government's $20,000 grant to help make her home livable again.
We lost our business and our house in the floods. We have been applying for the Back to Home grant. It's been the only grant that we were eligible for, apart from the Commonwealth disaster early disaster relief of $1,000 payments. We're finding that providing the documentation to Services New South Wales is particularly difficult, because they're asking for things that we no longer have. So we're finding it really difficult to navigate. It's very stressful. And I would have to say that I am more traumatised by the cleanup and the process of getting grants than I am by the actual escape during the flood.
A spokesman for Service New South Wales says the eligibility criteria for the Back Home grant is designed to ensure funding goes to those in genuine need and to reduce cases of fraud. More than 3,500 properties across the Northern Rivers have been deemed unlivable. And Resilience New South Wales says 1,200 people remain in emergency accommodation. An independent inquiry commissioned by the state government has begun holding community meetings to examine the response and the recovery from the catastrophe. Physiotherapist Danielle Pickford has put in a submission. She and her husband had helped coordinate boat rescues.
Watching some of the stories unfold in those first 24 hours was horrific. You can't imagine what was happening. I can't let that be unheard. And so as soon as the inquiries, it was just my whole mission. As soon as this inquiry's come in, it has to be heard.
And what change do you hope comes out of the inquiry?
Help. Like, we can't stop the floods from happening. We can better prepare for it. This happened on a whim and everyone came together and it was amazing. But imagine what we could have done with a plan. How do we react? How do we get onto each other? How do we make sure our neighbours are taken care of? You know, evacuation centres, just getting things up and running before everyone comes and steps in, because we've really realised that there's a delay. There's a delay in help.
The Northern Rivers Reconstruction Corporation, which has the task of rebuilding Lismore and other areas, begins work in July. Resident Vicky Finlay doesn't think she'll have any clarity on whether to rebuild anytime soon.
We are not actually putting the house back together at this stage. We're intending to just live in it as a shell, pretty much, and set up a camp kitchen. Until we can work out what the plan is, Council yesterday released a discussion paper which says that they prefer the idea of land swaps for people living in areas such as ourselves. So there doesn't seem to be much point in spending any money we do have fixing up a house that we may not continue to live in. So we're just sitting tight, but we imagine we'll be sitting tight for 12 months to 2 years at least in the shell of a house at this point. I mean, we're in our 60s, so we were planning on retiring in the not too distant future, which is now off the table.
Lismore resident Vicky Finlay ending Gavin Coote's report. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. If you're paying off a home loan in Australia right now, it's about to cost you more for the first time in 10 years. Today, ABC Insider's host David Spears on why there are more rises to come and the political pain for Scott Morrison just over 2 weeks out from voting day. the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.